Good morning. This is the reading of the Green Valley News for Wednesday, the first day of October 2025. Here on Sun Sounds, my name is Mark DeGroft. An 82-year-old Suarita man lost at least $450,000 in a cryptocurrency-related scam last week. According to Suarita police records and Lieutenant John Carlson, the man called authorities on Thursday to report he'd received a phone call from a stranger telling him to invest in certain cryptocurrency websites. At some point, the man tried to access the cryptocurrency, but the accounts were locked and he was told to put more money into the accounts to unlock them, Carlson said. The man split $400,000 between two accounts and deposited $50,000 into a third account, but the accounts remained locked, he said. It's a little unclear how much exactly was lost as the individual already had money in the crypto accounts, Carlson said. The lieutenant said that the Suarita Police Department is working with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to get more training on cryptocurrency. In addition, the department will be providing the town council with literature it received from Homeland Security on cryptocurrency in the hopes that it can get two cryptocurrency kiosks in Suarita removed. Last December, the Pima County Sheriff's Department's fraud unit began placing warning notices on 300 crypto machines throughout Pima County, including 17 in the Green Valley area. Cryptocurrency is digital money that is completely unregulated. It allows people to make payments directly to each other through an online system, but it doesn't require a bank or a financial institution to verify the transactions. Among the best-known cryptocurrencies are Bitcoin, Dogecoin, Solana, Ethereum, and Binance Coin. However, it's not government-regulated, and so authorities say it's highly attractive to con artists, to drug cartels, illegal arms dealers, child pornographers, and others. Once the money is lost, there's no way of tracking it or getting it back, authorities said. In 2023, the FBI received 69,000 complaints about fraud involving cryptocurrency. In 2024, that number jumped to 149,686. The amount lost increased from $5.6 billion to $9.3 billion during the same period. According to the FBI, Californians filed the most complaints in 2024. Arizonans came in 10th in a number of complaints and 9th in terms of loss at $392 million. The Pima County Council on Aging is holding a series of free dementia-related presentations in October and November. No registration is necessary. All you got to do is show up. Gain a general understanding of dementia with a focus on adopting a mindset of creating dementia-friendly community. This session, called Dementia Friends Information Session with special emphasis on preparing for the holidays, will include additional information regarding considerations during the holiday season. The session is appropriate for all community members at the age of 13 and older. It's at 9 o'clock to 10:30 a.m. on Monday, October 27th at the Green Valley Recreation East Hall at 7 Abrego Drive. And at 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Monday, November 3rd at the Green Valley Recreation East Hall at 7 Abrego Drive, it's Brain Health and Dementia Risk Reduction. Learn about risk factors for dementia and how physical health, cognitive activity, and social engagement can impact your risk. The session is appropriate for all community members 13 years of age and older. And Memory Loss, Progression, Behaviors, and Interventions, Part 1, Learning Out the Progression of Dementia, Brain Changes That Occur, and Considerations Throughout the Progression. This session is geared towards caregivers and loved ones of somebody that is living with dementia. Begins at 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, November 13th at the Green Valley Rec Hall, East Hall, 7 Abrego Drive. And Memory Loss, Progression, Behaviors, and Interventions, Part 2. Learn about caregiving strategies, common challenges of dementia, and how to approach them, and creating a routine with meaningful activities. This session is geared toward caregivers and loved ones of someone living with dementia. Again, 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., Thursday, November 20th, at the Green Valley Recreation East Hall, again at 7 Abrego Drive. A Tucson man suspected of murdering a former Suarita woman last year will be examined by two doctors to determine if he is competent to stand trial. Luke Davis, 32 years old, was arrested more than a year after Cassandra Poole was found murdered in a drainage tunnel just north of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base near Wilmot and Stella Roads in Tucson on March 13, 2024. She died of sharp force trauma, according to Tucson police. Defense attorney Nikki DeCampley asked Pima County Superior Court Judge Kimberly Ortiz for the competency examinations in a motion she asked to be sealed due to the sensitive nature of the material it contained. The motion was granted by Judge Tracy Miller, who presides over the court's mental health cases. Someone who is deemed incompetent is unable to assist their attorneys in preparing a defense and or doesn't understand the charges that are pending against them. If the two doctors agree that Davis is incompetent, they'll have to specify what mental disease or defect caused it and tell the judge how likely it is that Davis could be restored to competency with medications and or educational opportunities. Authorities turned to the FBI after not finding any matches to DNA found at the murder scene, despite running it through local, state, national, and international databases. FBI agents and TPD crime analysis use investigative genetic genealogy to generate a lead identifying Davis as a person of interest, and detectives confirm Davis's DNA matched the suspect profile. A further investigation revealed Davis had been living one-fifth of a mile from the wash where Poole's body was found. Authorities have described Davis as periodically homeless. Detectives obtained a second-degree murder warrant for Davis, and he was arrested on July 25th at a Midtown home and then booked into Pima County Jail, where he's being held on $1 million bail. His next court date is scheduled for November 10th. Local students and Suarita Unified School District Governing Board members were honored at September 13th at Constitution Day 2025 at Acacia Elementary School in Vail. The event celebrates freedom, the founders of the Constitution, and is sponsored by Common Sense Lady Patriots and made possible by donors and volunteers. This year's essays and posters focus on the five freedoms in the First Amendment. Home-educated student Kale Soderman recited the preamble and gave a summary of each constitutional amendment. Keynote speaker Jeff Uch, a constitutional scholar, shared interactive stories that highlighted the Constitution's historical significance. The first annual Patriot Award for supporting and extending the reach of Constitution Day was awarded to SUSD board member Paul Rodriguez. Poster winners were Laura Ritchie from Wrightstown Ridge, first place, Rigoberto Aristigue, Suarita Intermediate, second place, Roberto Haas, Wrightstown Ridge, third place, and honorable mentions for Zelda Ferris and from Copper View, Terry Lagarda from Wrightstown Ridge, and Indiana King from Wrightstown Ridge. The essay winners were Indiana King of Wrightstown Ridge, first place, Reese Kane, Copper View, second, Hayden Bryson on Wrightstown Ridge, third, and honorable mentions for Santiago Agundez, Copper View, Sophia Vidal, Wrightstown Ridge, and Alexander Vasilev, Sanita Valley in Tucson. All winners are fifth graders, and the group welcomes participation from the community in any future events. You can contact Peggy Gibson at csladypatriots@gmail.com. The Santa Rita Fire District Board was brought up to date on Wednesday on pop-up drills, some recent rescues, and wildlife fire deployments. Battalion Chief and Acting Deputy Chief Joseph O'Brien toward the board photos of a couple of pop-up drills. The training team will just go out and randomly grab a station and run a drill to kind of see where we're at on that shift, O'Brien said. He noted that there are a lot of new employees within the district and many new leaders. Last month, they performed palm tree rescue work, where they simulated rescuing somebody trapped underneath palm fronds, O'Brien said. They also practiced rescuing somebody from a roof with and without the use of a ladder truck. And also last month, O'Brien said Santa Rita helped crews in Tucson rescue a landscaper from underneath the crown of a palm tree while wearing turnouts and breathing apparatus because there was a beehive present. In addition, they helped the Tucson Fire Department save the life of a man who was pinned in a trench, O'Brien said. So our training's paying off, and we're seeing an uptick, at least in us being called into the city, in the northern part of the city, to assist with these rescues and these high-risk calls, O'Brien said. After the meeting, O'Brien said the training with other agencies allows for seamless rescues and means the SRFD can call on their partners if ever needed. O'Brien also informed the board the district has deployed crews to 5 wildfires in recent months, including those in Payson, Globe, and the rest in California. Petty Officer Second Class Nettie Manful, a native of Omato, serves aboard the Wasp-class amphibious assault ship USS Exiges, currently operating out of San Diego. Manful graduated from Suarita High School in 2016. Additionally, she is working on a bachelor's degree in graphic communication and plans to commission as a public affairs officer. The skills and values needed to succeed in the Navy are similar to those found in Omato, she said. I came from a small town in the middle of the desert where I learned resiliency at a young age, Manful said. I've carried that with me into my naval career. Manful joined the Navy 6 years ago, and today she serves as a mass communications specialist. I joined the Navy to better myself and my family, for a college education, and travel and see the world, Manful said. Essex plays a crucial role in projecting power and maintaining presence for naval forces. It serves as the cornerstone of amphibious operations, capable of carrying Marines, their equipment, and aircraft to execute a wide range of missions, from humanitarian assistance and disaster relief to full-scale amphibious assaults. This ship enables forces to rapidly deploy and sustain operations in littoral or near-shore environments, providing a versatile platform for achieving strategic objectives right across the globe. Resembling a small aircraft carrier, Essex's crew is made up of about 1,200 officers and enlisted personnel and can accommodate up to 1,800 Marines. My proudest accomplishment is working with the NASA Artemis II recovery team, Manful said. I grew up with a strong obsession for NASA and just the exploration team that they have, so it's kind of full circle moment that I was able to work with them. The U.S. Navy is celebrating its 250th birthday this year. Serving in the Navy is a way to better myself, test my strength, my resilience, and leadership capabilities that I wouldn't get from the civilian side, Manful said. She's grateful to others for helping make a Navy career possible. I would like to thank my son, August, for being my adventure buddy, for his love and support because I dragged him all over the country the last 4 years, Manful said. I would also like to thank my cousin Susie for being the support that my son and I need while I'm away or deployed. Limited rainfall dried up the lower stretch of Madera Creek, and late summer monsoon rains have failed to make a difference. That's why the Coronado National Forest Nogales Ranger District has asked visitors to bring their own water into the canyon, although taps in the park can still be used as a last resort. Bring all the water needed for your next picnic, your camping, hiking, birding, or recreational opportunity with you, Coronado District U.S. Forest Service officials posted this week on Facebook. Do not rely on potable water being available in the canyon. That was the extent of the Forest Service's Facebook announcement. On Friday, U.S. Forest Service Coronado District spokeswoman Star Farrell declined to comment beyond the short Facebook statement. She said officials would need a week to comment further. So how dry is Madera Canyon? Rusty Lombardo, president emeritus with the Friends of Madera Canyon, says that in the 19 years he's visited the canyon, he hasn't seen parts of Madera Creek run completely dry during a summer or a monsoon season. Doug Moore, education director for the Friends, agrees. This is the longest I've seen the creek go dry, said Moore, Friends of Madera Canyon Education Director, who's visited the canyon since the early 1990s. The monsoon didn't produce more than a trickle of water in the upper Madera Creek on Friday morning above the Mount Wrightstown Trailhead parking lot. In spite of quick and heavy rain, the precipitation failed to charge the lower reach of the creek with water to the Proctor Trailhead and then into Green Valley. Lily Hart, who has worked at the Santa Rita Lodge and Gift Shop for 17 years, said the lower Madera Creek has been bone dry for about 18 months. If it affects anything up there, it affects the animals, she said. The animals have been suffering the most. Animals, including bears, deer, and Cotamundi, have historically roamed the property midway to the Upper Canyon parking lot. He no longer comes around, she said of the Cotamundi. Hiker and birdwatcher Warren James, a New Orleans resident visiting Madera Canyon on Friday, said he saw water running for a time in the lower creek when a torrent of monsoon rain dumped on the canyon earlier in the day. Just that brief bit of rain did it, but I guess it comes fast and it goes fast, James said before hiking down part of the dry creek bed. Besides wildlife, the extended dry spell is beginning to kill off or set back growth of native vegetation, including trees, Lombardo said. He said some late-blooming flora has been found up the canyon because of the recent increase in monsoon activity over the past 30 days. With underground springs still producing water to two small pools despite the creek running dry, Lombardo agrees the dry spell is hurting wildlife. A lot of animals are coming to the pools from the upper canyon. So, for example, bears have been coming down, he said. That led to several black bear sightings in the lower Madera Canyon area in the early summer when temperatures climbed. Black bears are the only species in the canyon, and their colors can range from black, cinnamon, blonde, and brown. Those who spot a bear or other wildlife are urged to call the Arizona Game and Fish Department at 623-236-7201. Limited rainfall has also affected bird life in the canyon, Lombardo said. It has an effect on the way and what they eat, he said. The berries that they're usually feeding on are more diminished in the upper canyon or the wilderness area, so they're looking for berries in the lower canyon. He said the native trees, including drought-tolerant Mexican blue and Arizona white oaks, are beginning to die or have become extensively stressed. He said some trees in the canyon were dumping their leaves early in the summer season just to survive. More cities observed that in the lower canyon, drought-parched junipers are being overtaken by the mesquite trees. I think it's 20 or 30 years of drying, especially in the last 5 years or so, Moore said. We've had some really dry conditions, so it's definitely changing a lot in the canyon. He said in the past he's seen Madera Canyon flooding that caused major damage to the park, and there were years I can remember when the runoff from precipitation was a torrent and roared down the creek, taking out parts of the trail and some bridges, he said. In years past, there was enough drainage in Madera Creek to attract thousands of butterflies where the creek intersects Proctor Road. That doesn't seem to be happening this year. While it's true Alzheimer's and dementia are incurable and fatal, if people can train themselves to look beyond that, they will find their loved ones are full of potential and can still teach them many lessons. That was the message the Reverend Jade Angelica conveyed to about 30 people attending a Zoom presentation on Thursday at United Methodist Church of Green Valley. For the last couple of years, the Reverend Jerry Haas and others at the church have organized forums for caregivers, and they invited Angelica to share her presentation, Hope and Healing for Alzheimer's, Caregiving in a Spiritual Journey. Angelica's mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2001, and for the next 10 years, she took care of her. Her experience led her to write a book, Where Two Worlds Touch, and to create the Healing Moments Alzheimer's Ministry. Angelica said Americans, in particular, have been culturally conditioned to accept certain ideas about people with the disease, much like we've been conditioned to believe that blondes have more fun. However, people with dementia and Alzheimer's are not empty shells, which she said is how one journalist reported the story in Angelica's hometown newspaper. Through my eyes that were looking for God, I was able to see clearly that people with Alzheimer's and other dementias still have so much potential, Penelica said. If we let them, they have the potential to inspire us, to teach us, to love us, heal us, and amuse us, befriend us, calm us, touch us, energize us, enlighten us, empower us, forgive us, nurture us, open our hearts, and bring out the best in us. They can bring meaning and purpose into our lives, and yes, bring us moments of joy. If people look beyond the memory loss and their patients' inability to reason and care for themselves, you will see people with the disease that still have the ability to give and receive love, she said. People with the disease are just like everybody else on this journey of life. And once you take away the disease, people will find their loved ones still have the capacity to heal. They have personalities. They can still enjoy music and have the ability to connect with others, she said. Angelica said to Dr. Arthur Kleinman, a psychiatrist and medical school professor, has found that the most effective treatment for people living with dementia and their caregivers is caregiving and hope. Once we stop denying and fighting with the reality of what is, once we turn our energies to being safe persons and to give really good care, we're also going to discover that we can do something very important to heal our loved one, Angelica said. We can help them and ourselves to heal by alleviating their emotional suffering. She said there's a vast difference between cure and healing. Cure is a medical term. Healing is a spiritual term. So in spite of the terminal diagnosis that may feel hopelessly unaccompanied by lots of losses and all kinds of obstacles and challenges, we can really make a difference in the lives of people with Alzheimer's and dementia. We can help them heal through caregiving and hope. Angelica will give another presentation at the church in January on the do's and don'ts in caregiving. If you want to learn more lessons from the Reverend Jade Harmonica Angelica, you can visit healingmoments.org. It's about 10 minutes to 10 o'clock. Fielded by a cap under the 90-degree weather, Joel Smith crouched near a water barrel in a remote desert area near Aravaca Road on Monday. He twisted the lid off with ease, allowing an overflow of water to briefly trickle out. "They've overfilled it," Smith said, referring to fellow humanitarian volunteers, "but this tells me the water hasn't been used by migrants." Smith, who is a field operations manager with the nonprofit Humane Borders, said his group continues to see signs of migrant traffic through the desert, but most signs, like the full water tank this week, serve as proof that the Arizona's border is much quieter than previous years. According to a U.S. Customs and Border Protection database, migrant apprehensions between ports of entry along the entire southwestern border remain at historic lows. Despite monthly fluctuations, the overall number of migrant apprehensions has been on a downward annual trend for the past few years. In fiscal year 2022, for instance, the U.S. Border Patrol reportedly encountered more than 2.2 million migrants in between ports of entry along the southwest border. The Tucson sector, which covers most of the Arizona border with Mexico, accounted for about 252,000 of migrant encounters that year. Migrant encounters between ports along the southwest border continued to gradually decrease over the next few years, ultimately reaching the sharpest drop to roughly 229,000 migrants so far this fiscal year. Of those, about 39,500 migrants were encountered in between ports of entry in the Tucson sector. Only 1 month was yet to be accounted for in the fiscal year's 2025 statistics. CBP spokesman John Minnell attributed the drop to heightened prosecution of migrants and the end of catch and release, referring to the practice of asylum-seeking migrants being released in communities while they awaited immigration court proceedings. "You will be apprehended, prosecuted, detained, and removed. Now is not the time to come," Menno wrote in the email. Jeff Boyce, who is a researcher affiliated with the University of Arizona, said the decline in migrant trafficking along the U.S.-Mexico border this year specifically could also be traced to other factors. The Trump administration's shutdown of legal pathways for asylum and its harsh anti-immigration rhetoric threats of punishment for migrants, and Mexico's cooperation in restricting migrants from reaching its northern border. It wouldn't surprise me if part of the reason we've seen a drop in the number of border crossings is because a lot of people are taking a wait-and-see kind of attitude, Boyce said. But I think that's what we're likely going to see, and time will tell, is that this is creating yet another backlog of folks who aspire to pursue asylum. It wouldn't be the first time that migrants decide to wait for U.S. policies to shift before trying to travel further north, Boyce noted. Title 42, a federal policy that allows U.S. officers to deny asylum requests and immediately expel migrants, also created a backlog of asylum-seeking families that were waiting to enter the United States. Once Title 42 was lifted, higher numbers of migrants showed up at U.S. southern ports of entry to request asylum. CBP data shows that migrant encounters at southwest ports rose to more than 604,000 in fiscal year 2024, compared to the roughly 172,000 and 429,000 in 22 and 23, respectively, while Title 42 was still in place. A lot of these were people who had basically been bottlenecked in a sense. They'd been stuck in northern Mexican communities for months and years, waiting for the opportunity to lawfully petition for asylum, Boyce said. Amid current immigration restrictions under the administration, he noted one thing remains certain: the demand for international protection has not changed. The demand, the aspiration to obtain safety in the United States through the asylum process, has not gone away, he said. He predicted that there's a good chance that there will be another increase in migrants requesting U.S. asylum once the current restrictions are lifted. We've observed the self-defeating character of these policies over and over and over again in southern Arizona over the last 30 years, he said. Boyce added that efforts to suspend asylum requests primarily accomplished to push some migrants who wouldn't have otherwise followed legal pathways into potentially deadly and clandestine migration patterns. Those policies indirectly channel resources into smuggling networks that the United States government claims to fight, he said. And that is the reading of the Green Valley News for the first day of October. Mark DeGroft with you, wishing you a very, very pleasant Wednesday, and I will see you on Friday. Till then, take care.